Some have been asking about the book that I mentioned last week. This is the text that's mostly driving these Sunday school classes, Living in Community by Christine Pohl. Again, I always hesitate to say, hey, I'm using this book and that book, because people then take that as a complete recommendation for every word that's in it, which I'm not giving, but it is a good book. It has plenty of good things to say, and I trust that you're a discerning reader. So I'll just leave it at that. But very helpful. She has another book, as I mentioned, on hospitality that will probably come into play later in this Sunday school series. But we will use some of her topic headings and questions and so forth, but a very helpful, I think, introduction into the virtues or practices that are helpful for good community life. This morning, we want to begin in what she lists as kind of one of the major four practices or virtues that have to be in play for a healthy community life. Can anyone remember what the four were from last week? Okay, truthfulness. So yeah, telling the truth. Was there another? I heard gratitude. Good. That's what we're covering this morning. So, telling the truth, gratitude. Anything else? Hospitality. We're getting there. Keeping promises, good. You must have taken notes. Excellent. That's a hard one. fidelity, keeping your word, keeping your promises. So this morning, we want to take up the topic of gratitude. And this shouldn't be, I would say, too foreign for us as a subject. It may be foreign for us as a practice. But as a subject in our own context, in the Reformed faith, how does gratitude always come into the conversation? What's its major kind of theological placement in, whether it be the Heidelberg Catechism or in Calvin's theology? Why is gratitude so normative, or should it? Why should it be so normative for our Christian life? Yeah, so if we're guilty and God shows us grace, the natural or the reflexive response should be gratitude. And so if you look at a lot of Calvin's work, if you look at even some of our catechisms through the Reformed tradition, gratitude in one sense becomes the overarching virtue of the Christian life that almost subsumes all the others. If you're doing this one thing, then you'll be doing all the other things, is often how it's framed. And I think if we take a step back and if we look at just our sermon series on some of our focus as a church and some of our distinctives, if we believe that all is gift, everything from creation to redemption, if everything is a gift, then the reflexive response, the normal response to gifts given, is thanks, right? If you have kids and on Christmas they never say thanks, that's bad, right? So if everything in creation, from, you know, the air we breathe to the food we eat to, you know, the relationships we have, and then beyond that, God's gift of redemption to us, if all of that is gifted, you know, meaning we don't deserve it, we have no way to earn it, we didn't have to be here, then our normal kind of living should be lives of gratitude. Tell me, I guess, as we think about this, what do you think, how do you think gratitude helps a community? Or what could be some of the positive benefits for a, not just a person here or there being grateful, but as a kind of a community norm, just being people who are grateful? What might that do? Yeah. And so in the positive, what would that look like just for relationships and for community life? Okay, forgiveness. There would definitely need to be a lot of forgiveness. What else? Yeah, there would be encouragement. You know, instead of finding the problem all the time. You're finding what's good, right, and encouraging the good, naming it and letting people know. Think how empowering and lovely that is in comparison to the opposite. That if all we're do if we're ungrateful, if there's ingratitude as kind of a general demeanor of a place, I think all of us knows by just nature that's something that's not super appealing. It's not, even though we take part in it a lot, when we're around it and we're not the ones doing it, we notice how unattractive it is. It's not just, though, that it's unlovely. The Bible makes plain ingratitude is unholy, right? Again, Calvin and the Reformed tradition didn't just say, hey, gratitude's a neat way because it rhymes with grace and guilt, because they were all speaking English when they wrote these things. They didn't say this is neat. They looked at the Bible and saw texts like Romans chapter 1, where Paul's talking about the ungodly and those who say there is no God. And he says the big issue is that they're unthankful, to where Paul can say that grumbling and ingratitude are akin to idolatry, right? 1 Corinthians 10 and 11. How is grumbling idolatry? How can those two go hand in hand? Okay, so relate that to idolatry. Like, what's the next step?
You're worshiping yourself because something's bothering you. You're worshiping yourself, but it gives you the right and responsibility to tell everybody how bad it is.
Yeah, so you have a particular providence in your life that comes from whom? If it's happening, whose idea was it? It was God's, right? And as you begin to grumble about it, you're saying that there's something higher than God's will for my life, that I have a either view of things or things should be happening to me in a certain way, where I have the right to say to God, this isn't how it should be. So there's something that's not good enough. There's something you're worshiping or putting at a higher privilege than God and his own will. If you think of the word gratitude built into it in our... Reformation, this is the 500th anniversary of the Reformation. We know Sola Dea Gloria. What are the other solas? Give me one of the other ones. Sola Scriptura. What's that? Sola Fide. Yeah, so Sola Gratia. What does that mean? By grace alone. What word do you hear in there? So gratia and gratitude, you're gracing something, right? You're acknowledging the grace in something. You're acknowledging the gift. That's where the word gratitude comes from. So again, this idea of ingratitude is you're saying you're obviously ungrateful, but you're not seeing God's goodness in it. You're not seeing the grace that's provided in it and so forth. You're not viewing life as gift from God, but something else. Think of how our own culture, well, maybe you can tell me, how does our culture help contribute to our problem with gratitude? What are some of the ways that we've been shaped as a culture? What are some of our cultural virtues that don't necessarily help with being thankful people?
You deserve it.
Okay, we have an idea of deservedness. What's another name for that?
Entitlement.
Oh, it's a buzzword, and it's a word that doesn't just apply to one side of the aisle or the other. The problem with both is that we all feel entitled, right? We all, the reason we complain about it, you had to wait, which I'm going to have to wait again at the DMV because the lady made two drastic errors on the only two things I brought in. And my impulse is utter frustration because why?
She has a bad attitude.
Well, she had a great attitude. She was just really bad at what she did. So now I have a bad attitude. Because, you know, this is her job, and she should be competent at it, and I shouldn't have to wait there again. And there's a lot of that that's true, right? Because a lot of our society is an exchange built on commerce or time and commerce, there is this kind of built-in, well, because we're doing business, my attitude is completely dependent on how you perform your task. And because we do a lot of things commercially, that tends to actually lend itself into the way that we treat each other relationally. That, you know, as long as you're holding up your end of the bargain, then I will respond in a right way. So, but we are, in some sense, entitled. We, you know, by God's goodness, we have been a fairly affluent culture. You know, if you look at our particular context here in Temecula, you know, not having, you know, good opportunity is frustrating to us. You know, losing our job and not having something come right away. There's something built into us that thinks this should happen that way. You go to other cultures and the idea of like just going out and finding a job within a month just isn't even on their radar. That might never happen. They might never have a good job. But because of because of the way that we've been blessed in particular ways, we feel this is just the way it should be. So we live in some sense in a culture of entitlement. How else does our culture help contribute to ingratitude? How else does our cultural context contribute to our lack of thankfulness? Yeah. So our culture, because we are consumers in large part, and because there is this ability to get ahead, right, to go from one place to the next, the idea of being content or completely content with what you have just isn't part of the equation, right? I can't sell you anything if you're happy with what you have. I have to create a need that you have. I have to create a certain amount of discontent to then show you why this car is going to make your life so much better than the car you currently have. Well, we have grown up with that just being normal, right? You know, you live in some places and, you know, you go to the department store and there are literally three shirts. And you're going to pick one of the three shirts, usually dependent upon what kind of job you have. You know, so when we lived in Slovakia, you go to the Tesco there. You know, you need a pot for the kitchen. You go in, there is a pot. That's the pot you buy. The nice part about that is shopping becomes very, very easy. And, you know, it does not breed a lot of envy and discontent because everyone kind of has the same stuff. There's a lot bad with it as well. The pot costs astronomically higher than what it actually costs to make or what it's worth. And the lack of competition makes for some interesting business practices. That said, we do have, you know, we're going to get, you know, a bigger house, a better car, a better body, more we're always progressing upward. You know, the iPhone 10, when it comes out, it's not going to be worse than the iPhone 8, right? It's always going to get better, or they wouldn't make it in our culture. Dietrich Bonhoeffer wrote this in regard to Christian community. We think, even when he said, you know, we take that mentality and we then bring it into our spiritual lives where we say, well, it's got to be bigger. It's got to be better. God's got to be doing big things in our Christian community, or I have the right to be discontent, or I should, you know, go look elsewhere where God is really at work. And he says, we think we dare not be satisfied with the small measure of spiritual knowledge, experience, and love that was given to us. So he's basically saying, God might just have doled you out a small measure of spiritual growth, love for others. And he goes, you know, and there's something about it that's right to be grateful, the fact that this is the capacity God has given me presently in my spiritual life. He says we feel that we should constantly be looking forward eagerly for the highest good. But then we deplore the fact that we lack the deep certainty, the strong faith, and the rich experience that God has given to others. And we consider our complaint to be pious. So he says, you know, we're saying I want to get to this place spiritually, and I'm not there yet. And he says, it's interesting, when we look at things spiritually, we say that is a pious thing to say, well, I'm not where I should be yet. Listen to what he says. We pray for the big things, but by doing this, we forget to give thanks for the ordinary, small, and yet really not small gifts. How can God entrust great things to one who will not thankfully receive from him the little things? If we do not give thanks daily for the Christian fellowship in which we have been placed, even when there is no great experience, no discoverable riches, but much weakness, small faith, and difficulty, if on the contrary we only keep complaining to God that everything is so paltry and petty, so far from what we expected, then we hinder God from letting our fellowship grow according to the measure and riches which are there for all of us in Jesus Christ. You know, if we're always fantasizing about this or that spiritual life or this or that life, you know, even culturally, presently, you know, that sort of, you know, for lack of a better term, what she, Christine Pohl calls, you know, spiritual pornography. We're always fantasizing about what we will be, but never grateful for where God has placed us and just where we're at in our Christian walk and the people he's surrounded us by. You know, the danger of that is you overlook what is good. Well, what happens if you're always overlooking the good stuff in front of you? What won't you do? Yeah, you'll never be thankful for it, right? You'll always be wanting something else, and therefore you're driving by, if you will, passing by all the little ways that God is actually reaching out and gracing you in your life, but those don't count. You know, we need this bigger and better thing, and that's a very dangerous place to be. You can end up trampling good things while complaining because they're small things. You know, it's like the parent, and this is definitely has been my unfortunate parenting style. You know, I go to a sporting event, and there are, you know, four quarters or nine innings or whatever, and there's been a lot of things going on. And when the child comes to you after the game, my first thing is like, well, you know, here's a couple things you could work on. you know, always, you know, for the sake of quote unquote improvement, getting better, you have a tendency to then overlook the opportunity to encourage and to name the things that are good. And we can do that in community. We can say, well, you know, the church could be a lot better than it is. And, you know, that's true. There's a million ways in which we could improve, right? Our view of humanity, our view of sin, will make that statement true until we die. There's always going to be a myriad of ways this church can improve. But if that's all we're focused on for the sake of making it better, we will miss the good things that God is doing even while we're in process, even while things aren't as good as they could be. Let me ask this. What would you think are some of the attributes or some of the things necessary to be grateful? What kind of things do you have to have in place to do so? Humility. Yeah. You, if everything is obviously quote unquote owed to you, or of course things like this happen to me because I'm me, that's going to make it hard to be grateful. What else?
You have to appreciate when a need is met.
Yeah. And what would that require? I mean, what's that? Okay, we require a lack, or at least noticing a lack, yeah. What do you need to do to appreciate something?
An awareness?
Yeah.
Something's actually happening.
Yeah, you have to slow down enough or take note enough, right? You know, spot things and then acknowledge them so that you can then take it into yourself like, wow, this did not have to happen to me, right? Or these people didn't have to help me in this way, or this small favor that I take for granted because it's been done 50 times, really is something that someone's giving on my behalf. It would take slowing down enough, right, to spot and name things that are worth praising or worth being grateful for. You know, the grateful person is one who makes it a habit of noticing things. You know, as strange or just as simple as that may sound, you know, all the men are like, no, I see, I hear you. That is difficult. But just as a virtue to say, I need to slow my life down sufficiently to notice what's going on. And then to note and thank those who are contributing to your life, right? Things that are taking place. And this doesn't mean, you know, we have our head in the sand and believe that, well, you know, no matter what's going on in life, we'll just pretend everything's, you know, Pollyanna-esque, all of life is good. Being thankful doesn't mean ignoring hardship, but it doesn't mean acknowledging God in the midst of difficult things and knowing that even in those things, he's working, right? That even in the hardest parts of our life, there are things that we can be thankful for. That's why Paul says, you know, we can give thanks in all things because we know to whom we belong. We know that his plan is good. We know that these things are not ultimate. So even in the worst of things, we can acknowledge God's working in the midst of them. You know, our human nature, not just our cultural bent, but our own human nature is bent toward entitlement, that we think we are owed something because of who we are. You know, we always view ourselves in a better light than we actually are. And we tend to, right, think of ourselves as more important than the person next to us, which is why, you know, as a Christian virtue, we're called to do the opposite, to love your neighbor as you already, what? Love yourself. So you don't have to learn that part, scripturally speaking, but you do have to learn the part of loving others, right, to consider others better than yourself. Paul doesn't give that commandment because it's natural. That's what the new man does. That is not what's natural to us. So since the fall, we have all been self-absorbed. That's who we are. We are self-focused by nature. And therefore, you know, if we believe things are owed to us or we believe we're, quote unquote, earners, then gratitude becomes hard. Instead, it just becomes, of course, you know. You know, I'll use a more distant example. You know, in my own teenage years, and now that I've witnessed other people in my family go through teenage years, there's this idea that the whole world, A, revolves around you, and B, everything just falls from the sky into your lap. Like, of course dinner should be made for me, and of course I can just leave my plate where it was when I was finished. And it will magically get washed and put back in the cupboard. I mean, everything in the house belongs to me, even if it's not mine. I will make use of it and then leave it where I want. I mean, I still have some of my father's tools in my toolbox because of that belief. you know your Snap-on ratchet? for confessing here, I still... Well, we all still have a little bit of that in us. Not quite, thankfully, as dramatic as it was when we were maybe, you know, 16 to 18, but it exists. And that makes, obviously, community life hard if we're not going to break away from that. If we're not going to put things in place to say, this way of doing things ends up not only disregarding others' gifts toward us and their goodness, but it actually makes us miserable. You know, and you'll notice this as we, I'm sure, both by experience and as we go. Let me ask this. We'll get very nitty-gritty. In our own context, you know, in church life, what are some of the complications that arise because of ingratitude? What are some of the things that can go wrong because of that? Or what damage can we do? Or what are maybe some fleshly examples, both fleshly and fleshy, examples of how ingratitude might show itself, but we wouldn't maybe always name it being ungrateful. Okay, in what kind of way? I mean, how? In what sorts of ways can we do that as a community? Yeah, for sure, by how we speak of people. But what about, exclusion. Okay, relate those to ingratitude. So, what about, there's two or three people that are really good at this, whatever. They clean up every week, week in and week out, but it's no longer even noticed. And no one ever steps in to kind of replace them. It's just taken for granted that, that's their gift. And, they're just really good at it. Or it's not noticed at all. What damage does that do? Yeah, makes the person giving in that way feel that they're unnoticed, unwanted, unappreciated, right? And it doesn't empower them or encourage them in those gifts in that we're not stepping in to fill roles that should also be gifted, to other people. Just assuming it's amazing, all these things just take care of themselves, right, is a dangerous place to be. Or, maybe what if one person, since we don't have this, we can say, let's say a storage room, they're shelving, and the same person tidies it up over and over and over again, and then comes back the next week, and things are just left wherever. It's never noticed where they came from or where they should return. Those are tangible signs of ingratitude, right? You're saying, what you're doing isn't honored by me, right? Or they're just never, again, noticed or acknowledged. Those kind of things can be very damaging. Or there's this interesting assumption, and I do hear this, and it's one of those that makes me just wonder sometimes. There's built-in assumption of that, the people volunteering just have this amazing abundance of more free time than I have, and that's why they can volunteer. Which you'll notice, you should take a step back, because I'm not talking about myself. I don't volunteer. I get paid to be here. So this is not me. Those who volunteer most are usually those who have the most other things going on. It's not typically like this person just has this abundance of free time, nothing to do, and therefore they're helping out at the church. They sacrifice time. But there's this built-in view oftentimes in the community of it's like, well, I'm just busy. As if, what are we saying? They're not, and they just have time. Now, what they're doing is they're giving something away that's costly, right? And not only are they giving it away, then it's being, in one sense, belittled or made thought light of, because your own self-perception is that my time is either more valuable, more important, or all my responsibilities are more difficult than that person's. That's just not the case. So if those are the ways, or some of the ways that we can complicate gratitude and kind of a community of gratitude, obviously ignoring, outright belittling would be bad, or just these false assumptions, if that can destroy kind of, gratitude in a community, what sort of things let me not jump there yet. Let me ask it. If gratitude is the virtue, what are the vices that we'd have to avoid also? If we can weaken a community's gratitude by how we treat when people give gifts, they sacrifice their time and energies, what are some of the other vices that need to be avoided if we're going to be a community that's grateful? Selfishness, yeah. Yes, okay, so let's start with that one. Criticizing, complaining, grumbling. And we're going to put those in the same category. Criticizing is a little more sharp. But one obvious vice is grumbling. And again, there's always fault to be found. If you're looking for it, you'll find it. And everyone has those people in their life that, every time you talk with them, it's like, well, let me tell you the problem with this, right? And what happens to those people eventually? They either, start the fellowship of the discontent, right? And they all hang out together. But usually, a lot of people start avoiding them. And then what will the complaint be? Yeah, you know what? This church just isn't as friendly as it once was. Well, maybe. It's possible. That is definitely a possibility. But there are other possibilities as well, right? If we're constantly grumbling, people will start avoiding contact with us because it is damaging and it's just not edifying. Also, it's contagious. If everyone, you know, if that becomes just kind of a caricature of the church where it's just like, well, you know what else is wrong? You know what else is wrong with the church? And everyone starts, well, guess what? The whole thing will be wrong. It is like, you know, self-destructive and poisonous. And according to Scripture, it's one of the greatest sins that can be committed. And a lot of times, grumbling sprouts from forgetfulness, right? Meaning we don't remember and acknowledge the good. And so since we're not focusing on that, we give ourselves over to this void where we say, well, where are the problems? Or what's missing? What can I say that's not here? What's another potential vice that is dangerous? In opposition to gratitude, especially in community life. It's one of the seven deadly sins. We're narrowing it down. It's got seven choices. Okay, let me frame it this way. Community, in its truest sense, means we're close, right? And when you get close-knit, you begin to know each other. And what kind of sins arise in opposition to blessing when you're close and you know other people? Okay. Yes, but that's not necessarily a vice. That's just being... So the vice would be the response, potentially, anger or something like that. But envy. Envy is one of those vices that can really do damage in tight-knit community. Because in community, if you're near people, a natural tendency is we begin to do what? We compare. And comparison is the root, or at least it's the beginning grounds of where envy comes from. We're here. And I feel I'm just as important and good as you, and God gave you that job. Why? Why doesn't He bless my life like that? Or, you know, why do your kids all talented and mine are all very mediocre? No. You know, there's a million ways to get envious. You think that's funny, but you would. you know, the why not us mentality, and the reality that when you're in a close-knit group, that amplifies because people know more about one another. They know the blessings God gives. And we can do one of two things when someone is blessed with something. We can be thankful on their behalf, right? Join with them in the blessing. Or we can sit back and be frustrated that it wasn't us who received it. Which again comes down to, do I feel things are owed to me? Or is everything a gift, and therefore I can be grateful when given to me or when given to someone else? You know, if you become mad at someone else's good fortune, then, you know, this is, you know, the root of envy, you know, the green-eyed monster. What's interesting, if you know, you can also see if you become happy at someone else's misfortune. So, you know, let's say someone in the church got a really nice BMW, for instance. I was hoping he would be here, so this would be even more exciting. You know, and it's beautiful inside and out. It gets triple the gas mileage than your car. And, you know, and you have two choices there. Either join in and say, like, this is so exciting for you. I am so happy. Or be frustrated. And then if 2 weeks later, the whole back half of the car falls out, basically, and it's a $12,000 repair, you can either be like, oh, isn't that, you know, bummer for you, man. And then inside, you're like, see, this is what happens when you get expensive stuff like that. Or you can grieve with them, right? The danger of envy is that, again, you're always looking at what others have, comparing it to yourself, and instead of being grateful for the things God's given, it drives that wedge in community life, right? Certain people are going to have closer relationships. They're going to be more talented than you. They're going to have more money than you. There's going to be a million different things that separate you one from another in distinction. And either that's God's manifold wisdom on display and we can rejoice in it, or it's something that we can say, no, that should all be hoarded for me. And because it's not, then I have to be frustrated. The things that come when you envy, at least in regard to the opposite of gratitude, is that it begins to generate a sort of speech that either is very critical, they have that, but it's only because, they cheat on their taxes or whatever. Or you say, you speak ill of that which should be spoken well of. They're nice, but, the repairs are really, really expensive. You always have this kind of go-to way of disparaging the thing, even though it's put in the context of just, open dialogue. And that is a dangerous habit to get into, and it's one that I think all of us, especially in our day and age when things are put on display, things are a lot more public now, and some of that's very, very unfortunate. But because of that, we need to guard against this, to guard in our own hearts against it. And the hard part with envy is you can't admit it. Because, what are you going to say? I'm mad that you're happy. That's what really makes me mad, No one wants to say that out loud, so not only is it happening, we can't even confess that sin one to another because it's just one of those things that, we don't like to acknowledge. It's embarrassing. So what in response, okay, quickly, this is the most important part, so let's do it. What are some habits? I'm going to leave this to you. What are some things we could do? What kind of habits could you engraft into your own life? What could we as a community engraft into life that would make gratitude something more normalized? What sort of practices can you put in place that would help gratitude become a more normal, everyday theme in both the community and in your personal life? What's that?
Like what's going on around you.
Yeah, okay. Become observant. I mean, that is one of those things, pastorally, I'm amazed by. There's always, one or two, three people that the Lord has really blessed in a way where they just see things and then quietly acknowledge them, They'll write you a note or send a letter to somebody, just those. Or they'll hear in a conversation, so-and-so likes this thing. And then, the birthday comes and then they have the thing that, just those unexpected kindnesses. Because they're attentive, and they want to be a blessing to people. So start to notice and name things. What else tangibly can we do? Yeah, make it a point to speak encouraging words. Again, this is going to feel, if that's not your normal MO, if you've been raised on sarcasm or, been raised by me, basically. But, you look at even some of the practices from some of these kind of intentional communities over the year where, basically the first three things out of your mouth should be an encouragement to somebody in the morning. And they would do that as a way of just kind of, let me set the tone for my speech today. As opposed to, there's a lot of things when you're first waking up that seem worth complaining about, right? And if instead you have it just in your mind, I'm going to speak good words. Building words to the people I see when I, when I run into them this morning. What else? Yeah, join in, right, with those who are giving in certain ways as a way of expressing gratitude. How can I show that I'm thankful? To come and assist and maybe even squeeze you out, not in a exclusionary way, but in a, you've done your time here. How can we, replace you in these things and serve in this manner? What else?
And then don't do that. considering if the Bible verses come from God with his contentment to create the game.
Yeah.
I need to think about that. Keep your lives free from the love of money and content with what you have.
Yeah.
As God has said, never will let you. I mean, just to consider that I can be content, that I have all that I need, that food and clothing will be used.
Yeah. Yeah, and you're right. Knowing that thankfulness isn't just this thing that we need to gin up because it makes everyone feel good and God likes it. We have every reason to be thankful. It's not just, again, something we're trying to work into. But because we have every reason to be grateful, how can we begin to practice these things? And so part of that is it has to be fueled by the fact that you believe it. You believe that you have something to be grateful for. And that really does, letting the word of Christ dwell in you richly in that way to where you say, look, these things I'm moaning about, I'm out of line here, right? And kind of letting that be a corrective. A few things because of time, but this is something, think on it this week and we'll begin next week by kind of considering it. I have noticed over the years, just a kind note. I always have these intentions of, I'm going to write, notes every week. But because of my tendencies, it's like, well, the note has to become a letter. And the letter, what has been encouraging me over the years? People writing, this little two-sentence thing. Here you go. Hey, really appreciate this about you. I'm really grateful that you're here. And just making it a point, how can I put in flesh what I feel in my heart? Because that's part of the problem. Some of you are thankful. And part of thanksgiving is, A, acknowledging it to God. So even in our prayers, right, Paul says, I give thanks for you always in my prayers. So out loud to God, being thankful. But then letting that be something that flows back into their life. They have been God's grace to you, right? But that's part of what what you're saying in thanksgiving is God reached out and touched my life through you. And letting people know that they've been that for you really gives meaning to the small things they've done that they may not even know anyone notices. They may be losing the plot. They may be wondering, why do I, clean this up every week? they began with good intentions, but over the years, it's kind of lost its, they've lost their reasoning. Letting those thanksgivings be for them a way to reorient their service. Last things, part of what we do even in our celebrations and our feasting should be a communal acknowledgement of thanksgiving and really marking days well, being intentional, whether it be anniversaries or birthdays or whatever, of saying out loud, this is what that means, right? Even John Calvin was a big birthday guy, saying that, if you can't thank God for the day of your birth, then, I don't know where you start, letting us use those things, maybe around the table at night as you guys are eating dinner, taking time out, right? It takes time, so stopping and eating a meal. But also then saying out loud, hey, here's what I'm thankful for today. I mean, small things that give an opportunity to give thanks. We'll touch on this more next week because of the time.